Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 570. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is happening, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Chopping away on ridiculousness for the site that has not seen anyone's eyes except for mine and the wife's. So I couldn't believe how terrible some of the iconography was out there when I was looking for, like, I love that Money in the Bank logo that I modified for the Stunt Granny Audio, but the WWE's Stomping Grounds logo is just complete trash, and Extreme Rules is literally an X. Like, that's all the more thought they put into that design, was an X that says Extreme Rules inside of it. I'm just like, wow, man, that is some pretty lazy work there, guys. Oh, boy. What was it? Yeah, so I just, I was happy to come up with to redo the NXT UK logo to get the, I believe it's two stallions that are in that, on the logo. That old style one that I had done did not have that and looks way less cool without them in it. So, because the NXT logo is kind of boring itself, because I had looked at that a couple of times, although I did like the one, obviously, that they had set up for, like, the pirate skull kind of situation that they were going to do for TakeOver Orlando. Working on some design, more designs for Stunt Granny. Just because I've got the free time and I may as well use it. But I'm still also watching professional wrestling. And yet again, I was not at all surprised that the brand-to-brand invitation has been brought to the proceedings. Because I don't know how many times we've really talked about this topic, but they do a terrible job of building people up. So, like, they've got to recycle the people that they already have at the top. And they've got to have the likes of Baron Corbin go to different shows to lose the different people more frequently. Because, yeah, I feel like this is going to help in some circumstances, but most of the times, like this Baron Corbin one, it's just going to be a bad way to kind of, I guess, I'm trying to figure out if this one's going to develop into a feud.
I don't think it's going to do any, I mean, I think it was just a one-off thing. I mean, he lost clean in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Coming off of losing clean in the middle to Elias on Friday, which was an oversight, maybe on some level. I don't know why you would
have him going for a title and then losing the match before that.
Well, the title wasn't on the line, but still, you're facing the WWE champion in the main event of Raw, and then you're losing in the Intercontinental Title tournament in the first round to Elias. They could have easily flip-flopped the brackets so that that match took place the week after. Although, actually, Friday Night SmackDown is actually kind of stacked. So, well, I guess I'm glad that match isn't gonna ruin Friday Night show. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It was mainly a plot device to put McIntyre in a match and have, you know, Bobby Lashley looking from the stage. It made sense from the standpoint of, you know, Lashley, McIntyre, and Corbin were the three-man team during the worst period of WWE TV of all time. Because we need to be reminded of that.
Hey, it's a great reminder.
Some of the worst. Maybe making it absolutely the worst is a little too far, but some of the worst TV in WWE history, for certain.
Yeah, it's always hard to really get down to that dirt worst one.
But that was pretty bad.
Yeah, but I always get a pretty, like, I can never, I think I'm with you, like, just in general, like, I never feel like I can say that was the absolute best WrestleMania I've ever seen sometimes. And I can't tell you it's the, you know, well, actually, I know that nothing's really going to be worse. 9 was in Las Vegas, right?
For what? What were you saying?
Which WrestleMania was Las Vegas? Was that 9 or 10?
9. 9. Okay, that's a consensus pick for one of the two or three worst ever, yes.
Yeah. So, it doesn't get worse than that, so like but I do always have, like you said, like that kind of general sense that that something was bad. And yeah, that period wasn't good. Drew McIntyre has obviously gotten better in the meantime. I really like what they've done with Lashley, but I'm also completely bummed that there is not any chance in hell that Lashley becomes champion at this point, though. So I don't think another big loss for Bobby Lashley is going to help him, even though he's getting to kind of tear through some people. And he's looked like a badass, like he should have been, for quite some time. I don't know why it took the WWE this long to get around to it. But it's an easy formula, and it works. Because Bobby Lashley is a monster.
Yeah, it definitely works. It's kind of a shame that he's just being built up to lose to Drew McIntyre, but that's the way WWE has done business dating back to Bruno, basically. I mean, you build up your monster, and he loses to the babyface champion. It's definitely not time for Drew McIntyre to lose the title, for sure. They definitely are highly invested in McIntyre, and he's performing well in the role, so there's no reason to do a quickie switch. If you want to get another month out of it, you could maybe do some kind of a non-finish, but otherwise, yeah, I mean, Lashley is being built up to lose eventually.
And I guess I just hope that he can kind of stay on a better path moving forward, and that maybe he will get a chance down the line to actually, you know, get a real crack at one of the championships. Because the WWE would just benefit from having him be a badass. I mean, that's just all there is to it. You know, because I was trying to think if he's had a... Did he have a long feud with Braun Strowman at any point?
Yeah, last year they did the thing where they went through the electrical board or whatever.
Oh.
Or the screen.
Yeah, I guess in the WWE, a year apart is about as long as maybe you can expect sometimes. Again, the brand-to-brand invitational is... I always dread these things because you already said it. The WWE has a habit of losing. Like, this is only supposed to be 4 times per year that someone can, that person can go over to the other brand. And the WWE has a bad habit of losing track of these types of things. And to be completely frank with you, I don't feel like counting, but that's another one where I get a pretty general sense of how many times someone has been on a show. Because it's honestly getting hard to keep track of which show Charlotte Flair actually belongs to.
Still technically on Raw, but she's the NXT Women's Champion, so that's a free pass. But it only counts against her if she when she goes to SmackDown, which she will be doing twice on consecutive Fridays. Friday's already taking up two of her four appearances. So we'll certainly see how that one goes. But yeah, Charlotte Flair on every single show. I imagine she'll make some kind of appearance on NXT tomorrow. They even said that it's almost like they're trolling. So with all this Charlotte Flair, so she's going to be on their morning digital talk show, The Bump, tomorrow morning.
Oh my God.
And I'm sure she'll make an appearance on NXT because it's the Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley number one contenders match, which will almost undoubtedly end with Charlotte Flair interfering, causing a double disqualification and a triple threat match at the next takeover.
What?
I know it's never happened like that before. I don't know how that thought even entered my brain.
Yeah, that never happens. Especially when Charlotte Flair intentionally gets herself DQ'd the week before.
Right, and then Charlotte's gonna be wrestling Bayley on Friday in a champion versus champion match. Which, oh my God, if she just shows up and beats Bayley clean, that'd be funny.
I would think that that match is going to have some level of shenanigans itself too, honestly. Just because Charlotte Flair really was trying to go in on Sasha Banks there. And I would think that one way or the other, Sasha Banks, for good or for bad, for Bayley, is going to play a factor in her winning or her demise.
Yeah, that's very true. But I guess maybe that's not even the annoying, because the annoying one for Charlotte Flair this week. If she shows up on NXT to cause chaos during the number one contenders match, obviously that's setting up something from down the road. Charlotte, we're doing for Charlotte versus Bayley, champion versus champion, sets up a big is a big match to have on SmackDown. She did not need to be on Raw last night. She did not need to cut that promo. She'd already had enough time behind the microphone last Friday, and she did not need to beat Ruby Riott clean, who has not won a match since she has returned.
I don't know. Like, I can understand being a little bit concerned that maybe someone is injury prone after a couple of injuries, but I didn't think that Riott had that many injury problems. Obviously the most recent one kind of kept her out for a long time, but that's one of those things that I.
She has had two prolonged periods of injury in the last couple of years.
Oh, okay.
That is
Oh,
for sure.
that's right, because she was out when Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan kind of carried the Riott Squad there for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that did happen for a while, a couple of years back,
Oh, yeah.
and then really, all three members of the Riott Squad were basically taken off TV. Ruby Riott got injured somewhere in that time frame, and she was gone for like a year. So I could see it, but then why bring her back if you're not going to utilize her? And Charlotte Flair does not need to be getting glorified squash wins. We know who Charlotte is. We know what we know her moveset.
Yeah, that was one though. I was just like, I was definitely the advocate of, yeah, it's going to be great to have Charlotte in NXT so that she can have all these different opponents. And then even on the main roster, like, Liv Morgan's promo was all about the Charlotte Flair situation. She beats Ruby Riott. You know, Charlotte's already burnt through, like, way too many opponents. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, man. Not that I would think that Ruby Riott would ever be, like, a full-on feud. Well, of course, I'm kind of surprised that it almost seems like Liv Morgan is something of a long play feud. I'm not even sure how to word it.
It seems like they're gonna do the deal, and it's worked at various points historically, where the plucky underdog keeps challenging the big star. You know, losing a number of times, and then finally getting the big win. So it seems like they're going in this direction, and you know what? I'm fine with that direction. I imagine that there's a very good chance that Charlotte's NXT title reign isn't going to last much longer, possibly not past the next takeover, especially if a triple threat match allows her not to be pinned to win the title.
Right.
Yeah. So you could do something with Charlotte and Liv Morgan. Oh, as a sidebar, did you see the ridiculous conspiracy theory some other podcast that's not worth naming was peddling about Liv Morgan's promo?
No.
That because she's talking about her mother, what if Liv Morgan is the time-traveling baby of Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch? Did I break you?
What? Huh? I am so confused. I don't even know where you start to come up with that one. You know what I mean?
A lot better drugs than you or I have.
Whew. Yeah, I don't want those drugs. Not at all. Not even a little bit. That is... Yeah, like, why would you try to... Like... I don't even know how you implement that into the storyline, I guess.
That's what modern WWE is missing. Time travel.
Yeah, like, it's not like she's Trunks coming back from the future... Like, we saw Liv Morgan before. Like, she did not come from the future. I guess you could be selling, like, some type of a Chris Statlander, I'm from the Andromeda Galaxy style, I'm an alien bullshit. But you gotta kind of commit to that earlier than Liv Morgan has at this point.
I know. It's stupid. But I just thought that would entertain you. and drive the show to a screeching halt.
Yikes. That is just craziness. That is crazy talk. Yeah, so I guess... Yeah, Charlotte definitely did not need to be on Raw this past week. And like you said, like, even if Raw is her brand, or no, because she said that she was invited over because of the invitation, wasn't
well,
she?
No, she was mentioning SmackDown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she meant SmackDown. So, yeah, no, Raw is still her brand, she's still the NXT champion.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
It is weird, and yeah, she did not need to be on Raw this week, even if that is her home brand. That match segment did not need to take place.
And I guess the next segment that kind of hits me in the brain, honestly, definitely would have started the show, because poor Charlie Caruso had to say yet again that if we get Edge versus Randy Orton, it could be one of the greatest matches ever. Before she introduced either Randy Orton or Edge.
Oh, I mean, they're leading all the way into this. It's like they're just trolling now with it. They've even created a graphic for it and everything.
Oh my God, they have?
The greatest wrestling match, calling it the greatest wrestling match ever.
Oh, that might have broken me more than the Liv Morgan Liv Morgan theory did. I don't understand why they're so dead set on saying that about this match. Like, I'm sure that I'm going to enjoy it, but Edge, who is now in his late 40s, I'm sure he's gotten himself into great shape. Well, obviously he's gotten himself into great shape, maybe I should say. But you're still that age. And Randy Orton isn't any younger either, and he does not wrestle that attractive of a style. And Edge doesn't have, like, the moveset, you know, like, he doesn't kind of have, like, an AJ Styles panache that's gonna really set this match over the edge. Oh, didn't mean to use that pun, but oh well. As far as the quality goes, you know, in the ring, like, I think it's probably going to be a good match, but it's weird why they've decided to, you know, die on this hill, so to speak.
Yeah, there's been a theory posited online I've seen that where, you know, Randy Orton's pushing this so hard to have a straight wrestling match, then as soon as the bell rings, he kicks Edge right in the nuts. Right in front of the referee, causing an immediate disqualification. and then the match gets restarted as an all-out brawl.
Oh my gosh, if that happened, I would kind of laugh, but I'd also be annoyed that we are really, like, if we're going to see Edge versus Orton, I'd rather see a different style match. Now, of course, this is one of those ones that normally, it doesn't make sense when you go from the more violent match to the less violent match. But Orton's setting it up pretty well, and Edge hemming and hawing for reasons that I think both of us last week agreed don't make a whole lot of sense. You know, like, it would really... Again, I guess I expect the match to be decent, but wow.
I mean, there's a way to do the match where Edge out-wrestles Randy Orton, and then Randy Orton starts doing dirty tricks. I mean, not necessarily anything, like, blatant in front of the referee to get him disqualified, but, you know, averting the referee's attention, and then...
Oh, a pull of the hair here.
Low blow, pull of the hair, you know, poke him in the eye, do stuff like that. That would be something to do. I think that would actually, you know, work for the story they're telling. I think it'll be really good. I mean, I think they're just... they're just having fun with this the greatest wrestling match ever stuff now. I don't know if it necessarily will... affect my enjoyment of the match or not, if they do not in fact have the greatest wrestling match of all time.
Well, I guess that is the thing. Like, it will not bother me in the least bit if it is not the greatest wrestling match I've ever seen. But I'm with you. Like, I should enjoy it. Like, I like both of them as wrestlers. Like, I remember liking Edge as a wrestler. I don't see any reason why he would have been hemming and hawing last week, honestly. other than, you know, an age-related excuse. So, yeah, I guess I would have always liked it just, and I, this is just my general thought, is I'd rather have Edge working with other people not named Randy Orton, but here we are. We're going with this, and I guess I'm not too upset. Like, I mean, it kind of keeps something going. It keeps a big name feud moving along to keep interest if they feel like they need something like that. And doesn't quite use, and I guess no one knows how long Edge wants to stick around for this farewell tour. You know, I don't, did you ever end up hearing, do you remember hearing like a time frame on?
I thought it was something like 3 years.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty decent time frame. Like, I guess I didn't remember how long supposedly Edge had signed for, just because nothing ever seems to be completely concrete. So, yeah, it would be... Yeah, I guess he has time to do more feuds with people, and they still have spaced this one out. That it doesn't feel like they're overdoing things too much. Like, I don't feel like this feud is burning too much TV time. So that's another reason why the talking segments have been, you know, good at a minimum, and the feud has moved along in a fairly logical manner. So you can't really argue with how things have been laid out. I'm trying to think of what else, stood out, on Raw. Oh, I guess the other thing that, maybe stood out is, we got the official ousting of, Austin Theory from the, unnamed, should we call them Latin Syndicate?
I don't know. We should be giving them names, no.
Well, for reasons, and I guess this has been kind of interesting, that until the match last night, I didn't feel like they had that Andrade and Angel Garza had any real, like, and I still am a little lost on what their real beef is with Austin Theory. Whatever that is, I kind of like this whole storyline of people continuing to be despondent at ringside and Seth Rollins picking them up. And
that was really done. Well done. I like that a lot. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, so... having that be the way that that he, you know, kind of builds his flock, because have they even mentioned AOP at all in regards to Seth Rollins recently?
No. Razor's out, and they're not moving along with Akam as a single or as... or even as a bodyguard for Seth Rollins, which I think is a mistake. I think they should keep Akam involved in things, at the very least. There's no reason for him not to, you know, be Seth Rollins, continue to be a heavy for Seth Rollins during this period.
Yeah, he's definitely good enough in the ring to lose to most of the people that he's going to have to take on. I mean, I guess that might be the only bad thing, is that maybe they think that because he's a gatekeeper for Seth Rollins, he's going to take too many L's if they keep him on the main roster. I guess might be the only argument against not having him there. But yeah, I in general, I agree with you. Like, I think it'd help to have him there to act as a bodyguard. Just because, yeah, Seth Rollins isn't big. Austin Theory really isn't that big. What's his name? Isn't that Buddy Murphy? Isn't that big either? Like, they're both Seth Rollins is just over cruiserweight size, and Murphy and Austin Theory are probably in that range somewhere, that 205 range. So having someone Akam size around would be kind of a nice change of pace. And hey, groups of four always work pretty well.
Yeah.
And then when they get back, they have a tag team. But I don't know, maybe Murphy and Austin Theory will be the tag team so that Seth Rollins can be the singles champion. We shall, I guess, see how this thing proceeds. But yeah, I guess I don't understand why Andrade and Garza have a problem with Theory and why Zelina Vega was defending him so much. If she was ready to just drop him after one bad move, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Raw every week in the last month. They're all losers.
Oh yeah.
Why is Theory any bigger loser than the rest of them?
I have no idea. Like, because the only thing that Del Rio has to be smug about is the fact that Oh, did I just say Del Rio?
Yeah.
I don't know why I had him on the brain. Andrade has the U.S. Championship, so he's like, oh, well, I'm the champ. All of his losses, luckily for him, have been non-title matches, especially since they've been ass-kickings mostly at Drew McIntyre's hands. Andrade has lost, you know, just as much as Garza and Theory. So, you know, they never really on TV made it clear what the beef was. They definitely set up a beef, and it definitely, the payoff, I'm hoping is worth it. You know, I do like any time that they do kind of a congregation vibe. I like their, because when they lost the AOP, Rollins kind of lost the flock, quote unquote, mentality for his group. And I do feel like you need at least three people, if not four. And I guess that's another reason why I'd be up for having Akam around. Like, to me, a flock, like kind of a congregation that Seth Rollins is, that they're really presenting now. I think you need four, even a fifth member. Like, I guess you, things get a little unwieldy after you have a fifth member, but I'm really on board for Austin Theory and what ended up happening through this whole angle, even if I don't understand the original beef.
Right. Yeah. They've just been pushing and shoving at each other for weeks now, and I don't remember what was the cause of it. just general them not getting wins, but I guess Theory will be better off with Seth Rollins and Murphy and Andrade and Angel Garza will be better off. Just the two of them with Zelina. Even though, we will see what happens. I mean, Andrade's got the match next week against Apollo Crews, who they're trying to push for seemingly the 100th time. I'd hope that they'd give him this win. I mean, because if he doesn't win it in the end, then what's the point of all this?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if that doesn't happen. You know, if Apollo Crews loses, I wouldn't be completely shocked, but yeah, he's kind of at that make or break stage of even at least moving into the mid card of the WWE. You know, I'm not sure that he's ever going to be champion unless he ends up sticking around as long as Kofi Kingston did. But I definitely think that when you win these intermediate titles, you at least get a little better booking spots as things move along. And it was kind of lucky for him that that injury time was not terribly long recently, so that he could continue getting this nice little shine on. So yeah, I don't know where that leaves Zelina Vega other than having a bunch of losers in her camp, unless they're going to do a tag team thing in the future with Andrade and Garza.
Right, yeah, you could certainly go in that direction. And actually, they were going in that direction for WrestleMania before Andrade got hurt.
Oh.
Which is what forced the ridiculously early Austin Theory call-up to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, well, it looks like he's there to stay. I will say that.
They must like him that much.
It's kind of strange considering
he's actually in a better spot now. Because, you know, Seth's a bigger star than Andrade. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely is moving on up, and if I got presented that, I would not be arguing. Like, oh, I go from the guy that loses all the time to Seth Rollins, who at least has real title reigns recently. Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, and you know, Seth is going to be, looks like he's moving into a feud with, at least a one pay-per-view feud with Aleister Black before Rey Mysterio returns, and you can do a real kind of real grudge, you know, feud with Rey and Seth, as well as, you know, tag matches with Seth and Seth and Murphy and Theory against Rey and Al Black and any other baby faces they could team with as well. So yeah, no, it's a good spot for Theory, and now it's kind of keeping Seth in the mix.
Now I'm just trying to figure out what we haven't covered on Raw. Because we have covered... Oh. I guess in other weirdness, the WWE realized that the Iconics getting an immediate shot at the tag team champions, them winning, and then having a title match the very next week, put you in a really weird spot. Because why else would Peyton Royce cause her team to be disqualified? And it wasn't even like one of those... It was like a boneheaded one.
Yeah, it really was. And it did play into what they did later. Yeah, I mean... doing a disqualification, you know, lets them get another match out of it, presumably at Backlash, so you don't just job the Iconics right away. But it was weirdly done. I mean, the referee was clearly telling Peyton Royce if she did it one more time that she would be disqualified, and then she did it, and then she acted all surprised that they were disqualified. And then Billie Kay read her the riot act backstage and actually slapped her. Apologized for it immediately. They hugged. I've said this a lot about a lot of teams and groups in WWE lately, but I do not like I would not like the prospects for Peyton or Billy if they broke up.
I guess I always thought Peyton was a better wrestler than Billy Kay was.
Yeah.
But I guess because they've always been a package deal, it's hard to know what they are like personally. And I still don't know, like, other than them telling me that they're friends, I'm not sure what their characters kind of stand for. You know what I mean? Like, do you have any vibe for what their characters stand for?
Being iconic.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. But I mean, that kind of is the problem, is that it starts and stops with a word. And there isn't, you know, they need a little more fill in the blank. Like, I mean, they just need more to their characters. Like,
and you know what? When the dot-com cameras are on them, and they are gold together. They have incredible chemistry, great comedic timing, especially Billy Kay, actually. But that only occasionally comes across on television. I mean, when they do their entrance and they run down their opponents and people in the crowd, you know, sometimes they get some good lines off, but. Yeah, no, you're right. There hasn't been a lot of development, and of course, they just were after 6 months away, just plop back into the show like nothing happened. I'm trying to think how I want to word this. I guess there hasn't been much development for them character wise, you know, since they've been on the main roster. No.
Yeah, so I guess I kind of understood why that happened, but it was still just, you know, it's always one of those ones, just like, you guys could have handled this better. Like, how did you not see this coming when you did this other stuff? You know, or even do the typical singles match, and then lead up to a tag team match. Like, it isn't that hard, you know. Get two singles wins over Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, especially if it's by hook and by crook, and then move into a tag team match. And it's just, it's a basic way to do it, but it makes way more sense than doing it the way that they're doing it currently. And you know, it was kind of funny. I have had the name Natalia run through my mind when I was talking about Austin Theory, and I was talking about Seth Rollins picking up broken people at ringside. I'm not sure that Seth Rollins needs a woman component. But they definitely could be trying to sell Natalya if they would want to go that route.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that, but you know what? It would fit, because you know what? I've always felt about her that she is holier than thou, you know, mother hen type, you know, just kind of fake nice. So, and that just comes across, I think, when she's playing a baby face. I just don't buy that she's a good person. but that also comes from my years when I watched Total Divas as well, because she just seemed like, when the chips were down on Total Divas, I know it wasn't always real, but she seemed to always, you know, deep down be pretty selfish. When dealing with her friends, her husband, etc. So, I think you could absolutely tap into that with her joining Seth and his. They haven't given Seth's group a name, have they?
No.
And his flock. Yeah, I'll, in this case, I'll just say his flock.
You're not going to call him the. Yeah, I mean, You could go with Congregation if you want to, I suppose.
Congregation's another good one, yes.
Yeah, Flock does work. I mean, that's definitely... Everyone's gonna, in wrestling's gonna jump to Raven when you say that, but it does work for any pastor type, you know, angle, which is what they're going with. I guess I was kind of, I don't know if they're going that direction, but they certainly have presented Natalya as very frustrated, and I guess I do find that kind of interesting. Like, she is a woman that has been around there a long time, and everyone's talked about having a lot of respect for her, but, you know, she's never really... She really hasn't gotten back on track since the new women got called up. She's just a punching bag.
Yeah, not, I mean, she's had one or two title reigns, I think, over the last few years that, you know, didn't last very long, weren't very memorable. Then again, she's not very memorable. not a big fan.
Either. Like, I don't know if I don't really feel sympathetic for her because there's still some stuff that, and I don't know if it's, to me, she isn't as smooth as some of the other women wrestlers. Like, I don't know if it's her build, because she's more of a power lifter, but she also kind of has, she has a move set that really keeps her moving very quick. That, I mean, I think she'd almost be better leaning out, and it might suit her style better. Like, I feel like maybe her training and like her move set just really are at a loggerhead. Like, because she doesn't really show off her power at all, but she's kind of built like a power competitor. You know, right. Like, when was the last time that she really showed off her power? Like, you would think that maybe they'd be able to sell her power over Shayna Baszler in this match, but there is no such thing going on in either of the matches she's had with Baszler.
No, but, I mean, she did show off her submission knowledge. I mean, she's not, certainly not competition tested like Shayna Baszler, but, you know, everyone who survived the legendary, infamous Hart Family Dungeon knows at least how to apply their submission holds. So, I mean, in that regard, the match was all right.
I did enjoy the match quite a bit, honestly. And it did, and I'm with you. Like, it really kind of showed off what Natalya could do more than anyone. So, because Baszler is something of a given at this point. I mean, she has real legitimate MMA experience, so I think I would hope that's there for her. But, you know,
the car is still outside and the garage is still out.
Oh, okay, just close the garage door.
Is your car locked?
Yeah.
Positive?
Yep. Oh, real life just pops in sometimes. Natalya looked pretty tough in that matchup. And I did really, like, that was definitely a matchup that, to me, was a little bit reminiscent of Drew Gulak and Daniel Bryan taking each other on. You know, like, it definitely had a little bit of a throwback vibe to it. It was more mat-based instead of being high-flying. It's definitely a style that it can be very attractive when the right people are doing it. And, yeah, I mean, I think Natty and Shayna did a good job, and obviously Drew
and... Actually,
did
you, on the subject of matches like that, I guess before we move on to SmackDown, did you watch NXT last week and see the Matt Riddle-Timothy Thatcher match?
Yes, I did.
In that same vein of a grappling submission-style match, absolutely excellent.
Yeah, that was one that was a little bit weird. I guess I feel like that Thatcher and Riddle have been even weirder just because I guess I have never thought about Matt Riddle necessarily as just a striker. And they kind of put him in that role. So I guess I wasn't really surprised when he was able to match wrestling holds with Timothy Thatcher in that matchup.
Yeah, no. It's always a struggle when... And even when we talk about Natalya and Shayna Baszler, it's always a... It's always a struggle to believe that a legit UFC fighter is having that much difficulty on the mat with a professional wrestler.
Yeah, well, and like I said, like, I think some of it was based in how they presented Thatcher and what's it, and Riddle is a duo, and I guess that isn't such a bad thing. Like, I don't blame the WWE. Like, I don't know how hard international travel is. But I'm assuming that Pete Dunne is over in England currently.
Yeah, he is stuck over there for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, so I mean, you kind of needed to get the belts off of them. You either kind of have a complete GOAT opponent or a GOAT a partner for Matt Riddle, or you go this route where the partner ends up being Riddle's next feud to get him back into the singles division. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of the route that they decided to go, and I think that that's a solid route to go. You know, it definitely introduces Timothy Thatcher to everyone and gives them more of an idea who he is. I would think that he's going to end up losing this feud, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's already lost the first match, but jumped Riddle after them because he won on a because Riddle won on a fluke pinfall. You could once again, just like they did with Shayna Baszler and Natalya, you could use that to build to a submissions match at the next takeover if they wanted to. So that, you know, Riddle has to then make Thatcher tap out. Yeah, no, it was really good. Weird thing to me, though, is the loss of the tag team titles to the Imperium, or two members of Imperium. I'm still not sure exactly how certain people got stuck over there and stuck over here, because, you know, what are their names? I always forget.
You're not forgetting about the Forgotten Sons, are you, sir?
No. I'm talking about the Imperium guys.
Oh, because Walter... Because it's Marcel Bartel and...
Marcel Bartel. Fabian Aichner.
Yeah, Fabian Aichner are over
so
here.
They're over here, but Walter and Alexander Wolf are, I assume, stuck over in Europe. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, since it seems like they always travel together. So, yeah, that's kind of a weird deal. But I mean, they're a fine little team to have with the tag team titles. You know, just to as the NXT tag team division finally moves on from Undisputed Era, at least for a little while.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing, honestly, to move on from Undisputed Era. Just to kind of present things a little bit differently. And I do feel like with the removal of the Street Profits and really the Viking Raiders weren't down there for very long. But kind of getting all of those teams kind of out of the paint have, you know, I think NXT, of all things that they were hurting for, were tag teams. And this, these guys are going to help help fill the void, I guess, in the meantime. And, yeah, it's... oh, yeah, and I forgot. Forgotten Sons are on SmackDown now, too.
That's easy to forget.
Yeah, that one easy it is easy to forget. But, I mean, that does, again, like, not that it's much of a loss, but, I mean... It is one less set of warm bodies for the NXT tag team division. Because I don't know who else is there aside from Undisputed and in Imperium. But have they ever kind of finished their beef together? Because didn't they attack? Didn't Imperium attack them at some point, Undisputed Era at some juncture?
Yeah, they had a match at Worlds Collide over Royal Rumble weekend.
Yes.
Imperium won, yeah. I never actually won. I never went out and got around to watching that.
Yeah, I did. I did not watch that either myself. So, yeah, I mean, they could go that route, I guess, if they want to get Undisputed Era involved back in things, because I can't think of another tag team down there currently off the top of my head, unless they're going to have Fandango and what's-his-name get back together.
Tyler Breeze.
Tyler Breeze. Thank you. yeah, they're a little tag team short down in NXT, so they're going to need to prop some people up as tag teams to have challengers for these jokers. Oh, and why was I was thinking that there was still something else to head back to on Raw that I completely forgot about.
Asuka and Nia Jax?
Well, I think that's kind of expected.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a... It's just a thing. You know, like, I'm sure I'll like it, but there isn't much going on there.
Yeah, no. It's kind of funny when Nia Jax says, "You know what happens when we get in the ring?" Somebody went and found their entire record of Asuka versus Nia Jax match dating back to NXT through the main roster. Oh. Asuka wins every time.
oh, that's what it was. What are your thoughts on the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits doing these skits?
They're entertaining. They're harmless. It's a different way to build up to a match between the two teams without actually having them do a constant barrage of non-title matches and singles matches between the two. It's actually a better way to do it than the constantly just have them wrestle each other in various forms.
I'm not sure the basketball one I liked that much. This week's, though, was very amusing to me with the axe throwing. I don't quite get why the team that always loses decisively then ends up becoming a prodigy after the event is over. But I guess if they keep on going that route, it's going to be kind of a funny little shtick that they have going on. Because it's not Angelo Dawkins throwing the hatchet backwards and getting a bullseye was a pretty fun way to kind of walk off with that segment. And yeah, I guess I was just wondering if you're... That was the one thing left from Raw that I'd kind of left off the docket that I did find quite amusing, so I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about, at least. Is there anything in the wrestling world that we have not covered that is worth covering? I mean, do you feel like running over the Last Ride Part 2 at all?
No, because it's basically because it's just going to be the same damn thing every week.
I shouldn't
be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, this one wasn't too bad, but hey, let's do this other one. Let's see how this works out. Oh, that match sucked. Now I got to redeem myself again.
That was the only thing, honestly, because I was watching this week and I'm like, man, this really just seems like a lot of the same information from last week.
It really is. I mean, next week's, because they're really going to get into the Saudi matches, particularly the tag match with Brothers of Destruction versus DX. So that will take it in a different direction. I hope, and I hope everyone involved is brutally honest. It seems like everyone involved is going to be brutally honest about how bad that was. But yeah, it is falling into a formula, and I hope Undertaker can. If Undertaker realizes two things coming out of watching all this back is, number one, the match with AJ Styles is the way he needs to end his career, and number two, once and for all, and number two, think better about what you're gonna wear if there's a documentary film crew following you around, for fuck's sake.
I think he did think carefully about that, and he's
But people like him like to say that athletes should stick to sports and not be political.
Yeah. I know how it's always shocking to find out people like that are hypocrites.
Yeah. But yeah, no. I mean, as I said, it's all right. I mean, episode 2 and episode 1 were very much alike, and once again, I said, I think next week we'll as long as everyone involved just absolutely buries the tag match from Saudi Arabia, that episode should be more fun. And then and then the last episode that really focuses on the Boneyard match should definitely be pretty good.
Yeah, that was, honestly, I was going to say that the only thing that got me excited this week was the fact that Triple H just comes on preview for the next show, and Triple H is like, man, that match was dog shit, or however exactly he worded it. I'm just like, phew, man.
I think it couldn't have gone any worse was the way he referred to it.
Yeah, I mean, when you go that far, like, just in wrestling in general, I don't think anyone's ever gonna, like, really say it was really terrible if it was at that kind of an event. Like, I feel like, they're gonna have, they're gonna admit that it was bad, but they're not gonna admit that it's maybe complete dog shit.
Yeah, the camera should just cut Shawn Michaels and just say, I don't recall that. He's just trying to completely black it out of his mind.
I have shut that match out of my memory completely. Are you back on cocaine? No.
It didn't count.
Yeah, it was in another country. It didn't count. Oh man, yeah. So that was the only thing that was really all that entertaining about that documentary this week, because it was just like you said, like it was kind of the same stuff all over again, And yeah, it's going to be a couple of these, because I think that this three might be interesting because of that, but I don't know what they're going to cover with four. And I was trying to remember, honestly, was he mentioned the contract expiring?
Yeah, he did.
Was this the time period that he toyed with going to Double or Nothing, or is later?
No, that would be later. That might be what they cover in four. Because okay. He was doing that. He was starting to do more outside work. He was left off the card at WrestleMania 35. He was not brought back for that. He was brought back the next night, I think. That's right, because they did a deal the night after WrestleMania 35 where he showed up and tombstoned Elias, but he was not on WrestleMania 35. So that's what they could talk about.
Oh,
and the Goldberg match.
Yeah, they have a couple of things that they can still cover in that regard. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so I don't know, maybe these later ones will be, if they're broken up that way, they might have a little more interest to me than this second one that really was just kind of a repeat of the first.
Yeah, because that Cena match really was nothing. And I'm glad, I guess, they showed Undertaker disappointed with how little time they had. And that match is interesting because maybe Undertaker was in better shape for it, but I thought Cena was really bad in that match, actually. Just really clumsy and off his game.
Oh.
From what I remember of it, from what they showed.
Yeah, I really don't remember a whole lot about that match. Yeah, honestly.
I was pretty trashed by that point in the night.
So yeah, I will leave it at that. Any parting shots before I start talking about beers?
Go talk about the beers.
Well, went and did some outdoor work for my in-laws this past week. So I took the time to search out some breweries that I have never tried before in their neck of Ohio. Devil Wind Brewing was one of them in Xenia. I ended up getting a blend of their Night Stalker. They have a regular version on tap, and they also had a red velvet on tap. And the wife and I were hoping for all red velvet. They ran out partially through our pour. So we decided to just get an old blend of the Night Stalker. And it's pretty tasty. I don't know which flavor profile I'm really getting. I'm going to assume that the red velvet is a little more chocolatey and maybe a little more sweet. So, yeah, but it's a good beer. So if you happen to be wandering around Xenia, Ohio, I would certainly suggest that is a beer for you to give a try out if you especially like dark Imperial Stouts. It does have a nice chocolatiness to it. It does have a little bit of a sweet component, and it's pretty solid at 10.5% alcohol. So it will do the job quickly. And I'm going to go finish off the growler after I say at DeFrango 11, at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher. And I think we're approved everywhere else. So yes, if you listen on that platform, you should be able to find us. You should see the NXT UK style logo this week, for this week's episode. So enjoy, have a good night. Thanks.
Later.